Happiness, which is the satisfaction of desire, is the negative element. It's a brief moment of not striving. True to the nature of the will, there's no final end to this cycle of desire, suffering, and satisfaction.
For all striving springs from want or deficiency, from dissatisfaction with one's own state or condition, and is therefore suffering so long as it is not satisfied. No satisfaction, however, is lasting. On the contrary, it is always merely the starting point of a fresh striving. Thus, that there is no ultimate aim of striving means that there is no measure or end of suffering.
Schopenhauer believes that Aristotle not only mistakes the fundamental nature of the will, he falls into the same confusion as Kant and others regarding the relationship between the will and the intellect. All these philosophers assume in their ethics that if you know what rules to follow or know what good to pursue, you can turn the will to your designs. They believe that knowledge is primary, the will secondary, that the will follows knowledge. Schopenhauer's philosophy of the will, however, makes the will primary.
According to the whole of my fundamental view, all this is a reversal of the true relation. The will is first and original. Knowledge is merely added to it as an instrument belonging to the phenomenon of the will. Therefore, he knows himself in consequence of and in accordance with the nature of his will, instead of willing in consequence of and according to his knowing, as in the old view. With those other thinkers, he wills what he knows. With me, he knows what he wills.
Since Schopenhauer believes the will is the primary element of human experience, we can understand human conduct and the principles of good or bad action only if we proceed from a prior understanding of the will. In his ethical philosophy, Schopenhauer describes actual human conduct and the rules it follows. Unlike others, he does not prescribe certain rules to follow. Though Schopenhauer doesn't offer any precepts for action, he does believe that there are different types of moral behavior. These types coincide with different stages of individual enlightenment about the nature of the will. The lowest level of morality, also the most common, is egoism. The egoist defines the good quite narrowly. What is good for me is good. He even denies the appearance of the will in other people. The egoist says, but to me, my will seems the only one. From this naive standpoint, every other thing and every other person exists to benefit the egoist's will.
Every individual makes himself the center of the world and considers his own existence and well-being before everything else. This disposition is egoism, which is essential to everything in nature.
When every individual takes this point of view, the result is indeed a battlefield for individual survival. The English philosopher Thomas Hobbes has described this view of the world in his book Leviathan.
The condition of man is a war of everyone against everyone, in which case everyone is governed by his own reason, and there is nothing he can make use of that may not be a help unto him in preserving his life against his enemies.
At the intermediate level of morality, people stop denying the will of others. They still seek to affirm their own will, but not to the extent that they choose to injure others. At this level, we're no longer egoists, pure and simple. We've reached a stage of enlightened self-interest. Schopenhauer says, we are then just.
In order to increase his own well-being, he will not inflict suffering on others. That is to say, he will not commit any crime. He will respect the rights and property of everyone.
Such a man gradually discerns the truth that the will to live, which he finds in himself, is also present in others. As Schopenhauer says, people begin to see through the principium individuationis, which would have us believe that we're different from every other being. The bad man is wholly under the illusion that he's different from everyone else. The just man has penetrated what the Indian philosophers call the veil of Maya, or the veil of illusion.
We now see that for such a just man, the principium individuationis is no longer an absolute partition as it is for the bad, that he does not, like the bad man, affirm merely his own phenomenon of will and deny all others, that others are not for him mere masks, whose inner nature is quite different from his. On the contrary, he shows by his way of acting that he again recognizes his own inner being, namely the will to live as thing in itself, in the phenomenon of another, given to him merely as representation. Thus he finds himself again in that phenomenon up to a certain degree, namely that of doing no wrong, that is, of not injuring. Now, in precisely this degree, he sees through the principium individuationis, the veil of Maya. To this extent, he treats the inner being outside himself like his own. He does not injure it.
We don't see through this deception by learning certain abstract moral rules. For Schopenhauer, this knowledge is a sort of intuitive realization.
It is a direct and intuitive knowledge that cannot be reasoned away or arrived at by reasoning. A knowledge that, just because it is not abstract, cannot be communicated, but must dawn on each of us.
As this knowledge becomes more and more distinct, we move to progressively higher levels of morality. We began with egoism, moved to enlightened self-interest. Now we advance to the third stage, altruism. Here, we're willing to neglect our own interests to help others. An altruist recognizes that the will in others is the same as his will, so that their suffering is also his.
He recognizes immediately, and without reasons or arguments, that the in itself of his own phenomenon is also that of others, namely that will to live, which constitutes the inner nature of everything, and lives in all. In fact, he recognizes that this extends even to the animals, and to the whole of nature. He will therefore not cause suffering, even to an animal.
Altruists recognize that all creatures are joined together in a single life. If this were the final stage of Schopenhauer's ethics, salvation would aptly be described as loving one's neighbor. But since the nature of life itself is suffering, salvation is achieved not through altruism, but through the fourth and final stage of morality, asceticism. Asceticism, the highest expression of morality, is a denial of the senses, a denial of all desires, a denial of the will to live. Schopenhauer believes that we can save ourselves from the craving of the will only by denying it. Here again we see Schopenhauer's unrelenting pessimism, his belief that life is a sort of punishment, an eternal suffering. To believe that this world and this life are good, that is, to be an optimist, is itself bad. Optimism, where it's genuine, he says, makes a mockery of human suffering.
I cannot hear this holds the statement that optimism, where it is not merely the thoughtless talk of those who harbor nothing but words under their shallow foreheads, seems to me to be not merely an absurd, but also a really wicked way of thinking, a bitter mockery of the unspeakable sufferings of mankind.
Schopenhauer says the source of our suffering is the will. We experience the will to live as our inner being. This same will manifests itself as suffering in every being. Schopenhauer says that if we recognize this, we can quiet the will. We can no longer be fooled into fruitless attempts to appease the will.
But the man who sees through the principium individuationis and recognizes the true nature of things in themselves, and thus the whole, is no longer susceptible of such consolation. He sees himself in all places simultaneously and withdraws. His will turns about. It no longer affirms its own inner nature, mirrored in the phenomenon, but denies it. The phenomenon by which this becomes manifest is the transition from virtue to asceticism.
Schopenhauer advocates asceticism as the perfection of morality, observing that it's been practiced by many of the Christian saints and by Hindu and Buddhist believers. But Schopenhauer has removed the mythical elements from this experience. The Christian ascetic may seek of life a union with God. The Buddhist may seek nirvana. But their experiences are described in mythical language.
Thus it may be that the inner nature of holiness, of self-renunciation, of mortification of one's own will, of asceticism, is here for the first time expressed, in abstract terms and free from everything mythical, as denial of the will to live, which appears after the complete knowledge of its own inner being has become for it the quieter of all willing.
The systematic nature of Schopenhauer's philosophy suggests that pessimism may not be the final conclusion to be drawn. Taking his views a step further may result in nihilism, a rejection of all traditions and beliefs as senseless, useless, harmful. Here, not only the will, but everything is to be denied. For Schopenhauer, the will is the inner nature of the world that we experience as representation is only a manifestation of its inner nature. The will.
In art, we find a momentary escape from serving the will by contemplating the eternal ideas that express the will. The ideas expressed in nature and in art offer us a contemplative oasis from the cravings of our own wills. But an ultimate release from the will is offered by morality, which abolishes both the cravings of the will and the pleasures of our senses. The ecstasy of the ascetic transcends the will and the world. It finds neither God nor nirvana. It finds merely nothingness. If, therefore, we have recognized the inner nature of the world as will, and have seen in all its phenomena only the objectivity of the will, and if we have followed these from the unconscious impulse of obscure natural forces up to the most conscious action of man, we shall by no means evade the consequence that with the free denial, the surrender of the will, all those phenomena also are now abolished. That constant pressure and effort, without aim and without rest, at all grades of objectivity in which and through which the world exists, the multifarious forms succeeding one another in gradation, the whole phenomenon of the will, finally, the universal forms of this phenomenon, time and space, and also the last fundamental, this very real world of ours, with all its suns and galaxies, is nothing.